Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Lone Wolf Bakes, Texas Giants. I'm Tom. Just about 11 on the board. S&P futures up 11 and a quarter. Bullish this morning. We're down yesterday some, but not as low as we were during the day. Dow futures up 119. NASDAQ futures up 38. Well, up 47 cents. It's been steady to down lately, but now it's up. And anybody who's noticed their gas is up probably 30 cents in the last 3 weeks. So, got that going for us. We have Kevin with us.
You do.
How are you, man?
I'm doing okay.
Well, that's a good thing. I didn't have a chance yesterday to talk to Lou regarding the great Nike shoe incident. But then, of course, I started having a discussion with my, let's just say somebody I know yesterday. I won't say my nephew.
No, definitely don't say that.
No, I won't say that. It was my worst nightmare discussion with the new generation, where you have your opinion, even though you have, which by the way might be the right opinion. I could very well be wrong in the new world. That's not the point. Without any fact whatsoever, and so you know, but it doesn't matter. You've heard 15 people on TV talking about it that done nothing. They listen to people on CNBC yesterday talking about it. They actually done no homework on the whole thing. Which, you know, again, the facts don't necessarily make sure that you get the right thing, but you think you'd like to start there at some point. So we did not talk about it yesterday. We probably should have. So I called Lou. I said, what's the deal with this guy? And he said, well, he's got a $10 million policy from Duke. Okay, now not one person on TV.
I read eight, but close enough.
Not one person on TV yesterday had mentioned that while they were talking
about it. Yeah, and it's not... I saw it in some media thing that came across Twitter, so it's out there in media, but yeah, most of them don't mention it, and it's not directly from Duke. It's through whatever clearinghouse the NCAA has for that.
Well, evidently, this is how Lou explains it, and you know how current he is with it because he has data, but Lou's usually pretty right. He said, "What the deal evidently appears to be, Kevin, is you." Just the history of this, and Kevin, in my time, Notre Dame had a guy named Troy Murphy. Now, he's already played a huge career in the NBA, and he's retired, so it's been a while. And he was a junior. He was one of the first guys, not first guys, but he had played as a freshman, so he played 3 years. He was, you know, player of the year in the Big East twice already. So he had paid for this insurance his junior year, as I recall, Kevin, meaning his family. And his mom and dad got divorced before his senior year, did the usual divorce thing, and didn't have any money to pay for his insurance. So basically Mike Bray said, look, you've done it all you can in college, go, you know, because at that time the schools couldn't help him out. Then it blobbed into something where I think the schools can lend him the money. I think what Lou claims now is that, and again, don't take this as total gossip, but it has something to do with, you can lend the guy the money, okay, now, and he pays for it. All right, now there's a loan agreement, evidently. So the kid goes out and pays, you know, what do you figure it costs him? It's got to cost him half a mil, depending on, you know, exactly what the policy is, of course. The other kid from Notre Dame, his policy was what round you got drafted in. Now in football, that probably makes more sense than basketball, because if this kid's not in the first round, something really bad happened to him, right? I mean, I would
say. Well, in this case, yeah. He'd have to fall below 16th pick.
Right. Okay, so
he'd still be taken in the first round, but if he falls that low, then it pays, and you know that there's specific dollars associated with that, and he's not falling below the 16th pick.
So what, evidently what happens is...
He would have had to have a Jalen Smith injury to, fall that far.
Well, but now he I guess when he gets drafted, on or about the first paycheck, I think they forgive the loan, which now makes it income. Which means now he has the money to pay the income tax. Because on a forgiven loan, you got to pay income tax, correct?
Yeah, I know, you do, but that one's news to me, but okay, I'll believe it.
I think that's part of, well, if you just pay it for him, that's income, right? But you don't want to pay an income, he doesn't have any money now to pay income taxes, right?
Oh, so we're deferring the income, that's all.
Yes.
It's income either way,
and right now it's a loan.
You're doing the legal machinations you have to do to defer the income until he can pay the tax on it.
Right. So,
assuming that his family can't afford it. I wouldn't necessarily assume.
Well,
certainly not in every case.
No, I would not in every case. No, but I think in this particular case, Duke ponied it up. All right. So he's got this number. So then the number comes in. He should sit the rest of the year. It's through some guy from a serious radio guy. Forget his name. Hot Rod something something or whatever. He should never play again. This is too much risk. And I'm thinking, if you're a basketball player, this is what you do. This is what makes you valuable, is you win the NCAA. You don't sit it out. I mean, I know if you're that good.
I don't. In his case, I don't think it would. I don't think whether he plays or not is going to influence where he gets drafted. He's an incredible talent. He will be taken in the first round.
I don't disagree, but I'm saying
he will be taken, I'm sure, with the first pick. But I see what they're saying is, why risk further injury? And I think the real answer is, anybody who is saying that doesn't really understand how competitive these guys are. And I think you're going down this road when you say it's part of what it makes him who he is.
Right.
It isn't just that he's incredibly gifted, but he's a driven young man who is really getting, the most out of his talent, and that's what makes him so good. If he didn't play, I think people would still consider him a driven young man at this point in his life. But, I'd understand it either way.
Well, what I'm doing is, as usual, Kevin, I'm searching for the line. I mean, we started out the week discussing the episode in New York with Amazon. And some people, AOC and her group, maybe didn't understand the numbers very well, thought that $80,000, but her mistake is she doesn't realize that the money's not there for other stuff, that it was going to be money that didn't get paid over time.
So sort of a fundamental process misunderstanding.
Right, right. Yep. But the fact is, on the face of it, she's saying that $80,000 a job is kind of too much to pay a company making that kind of money and really not paying any taxes for a while. Now, I may, and you and I may say 40 is the number or zero is the number or something. I don't think anybody thinks the number is zero, especially if you count infrastructure, because you always got to help people out with infrastructure if they're bringing that kind of stuff. But you can debate the number. Now, what I'm pointing out with this guy, this is my essence of my argument with my nephew, is where's the line? I mean, you sit out the NCAAs. Now, the guy coming up, first of all, he didn't realize, A, that there was the insurance policy. Everybody yesterday was talking, and he's hundreds of millions of dollars. Steph Curry makes $12 million a year on his shoe contract. Steph Curry's a 10-time All-Star, 8-time All-Star, for God's sake. There's only about five people in all of the NBA that do more than, Michael Jordan is still number one, by the way, that get more than $10 million a year on a shoe contract. Plus the rookie salary is, I'm going to say if he's the number one pick, which he ought to be, he's going to come in at about $45 million for the first however many years. And what, in the first 2 years are guaranteed, and they'll be $15 million. All right, so I got 15, but what happens to the shoe contract if you sit out the NCAA? I guess what I'm getting to, Kevin, is now you're a rookie somewhere, and you're on a crummy team. Now, the minute something happens to you, a hangnail, do you sit out that season because you don't want to hurt yourself before you get your max contract? I mean, at some point here, people just look at you and go, I don't want this guy. I mean,
you remember what happened when young Michael Jordan got hurt?
Then the Bulls drafted Scottie Pippen, and he also came back and scored 60 points in the playoffs.
That's not what I'm getting at. It was the Bulls holding him back?
Yeah, Well, they brought him back for the playoffs.
Remember, they were putting the limit on how much he could play, and he hated it.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
They didn't bring him back from the playoffs. He forced his way back. They didn't want him to play at all.
And he said, I'm healthy. I'm playing.
And then he dropped, 63 points on the Celtics?
Yeah.
Even though they lost the game.
Well, that's what I mean. At some point here, you're doing what you want. I mean, I don't know how you. There's a limit here. I mean, if somebody says, Matty Weber can throw the ball 100 miles an hour, and you bring him out for a tryout, okay, let's see what you got. Well, I can't throw. Why? I'm liable to get hurt. how do I know?
By the way, Zion has been playing.
Yeah, I understand.
He's not holding out.
I think he's going to continue to play. I think everyone's going to be fine.
That guy's one of the most, from all I read and all I hear, he's about as competitive as it gets.
You don't get to that level without being like that.
Right.
I mean,
he doesn't want to sit out.
Well, I'm saying the armchair quarterbacks are the people I'm sniping at.
I think the armchair quarterbacks that you refer to, you know, at least the intellectual ones, are just saying that it's America. You have the right, if there's a market for you to get paid millions of dollars, you should have the right to do that. You shouldn't have to masquerade as a college student for 1 year while people make money off of you and your name and what you're able to do, and then obviously risk injury as well. I mean, I think that's all. It's a very common sense argument.
But it is always
it's a role that's going to change anyway. So starting next season. So
okay, but there's
the point will be kind of less substantial.
No, it's just going to be a different limit. I'm going to say LeBron.
But Zion Williamson won't have to go. He will have to go to the G League for a year.
Okay, but I'm saying the
out of high school, but at least he'll get paid up front, legitimately.
And what I'm saying, Kevin, is no matter what the limit is, there's always going to be somebody, male, female, whatever it is, who, if there's a beauty contest that you have to be 18, there's going to be somebody who's 17 that says, wow, she's pretty hot. How do you not let her in there? She's better looking than the 18-year-old. If the rule goes to 18, to where you don't have to masquerade as a college student for a year, which, by the way, I agree with that. I mean, there's going to be a LeBron, there's going to be a Will Chamberlain that could play at 17 and a half, right? There's going to be some guy in Texas who's been doing dirt car racing since he was 9 years old, but still can't get his driver's license until he's 16. That kid should be able to drive at 15? Probably. I mean, there's always going to be somebody that tests the limit, no matter what the limit is, right?
Yep.
And I think in America, what's the legal age where you can work in America full time? Is it 16?
Most jobs 18.
You can work 16. Might need a work permit.
Need a work permit.
I remember for me, I could work part time, which was up to I think 30 hours a week when I was 14 or 15. But then when I turned 16, I remember in the summer I worked 40 hours a week, and I think that was fine.
I think it's 16, but you can't do
maybe probably Matt. I don't know the answer.
I don't know that you can operate machinery at 16.
That could be. I guess my point is that if I were making the rules, if you're of legal age to work, and a team wants to pay you, and you're 16, I think you should have the right to do that.
At some point, the NBA, just like businesses, I think you can make a. You don't want to take a 17-year-old on the road with you, maybe. You know, it's just
well, yeah. I think the market would take care of itself. I don't think many NBA teams are going to do that.
Well, but all it takes is one. I mean,
who remembers the days of being able to take high school players, and it happened all the time. The team management hated it because it was such a crapshoot taking those guys, but nobody wanted to pass up on the next LeBron James or Kevin Garnett, and so they took the Eddie Currys really, really high. And at the same time, the players hated it because they didn't want these high school kids coming in and taking up roster spots when they weren't ready to play and weren't going to be ready to play for several years. So that's how they came to that agreement. That's a collective bargaining agreement, and that's the way the collective bargaining system works, whether you like it or not. You know, if you favor unions, you favor that process, and that's the process that determined that basketball players had an age limit.
I would, Lou and I debate on this, and I know he's right, but I still want to fight with him about it. I don't how we got to this collective bargaining where you can. The people in the room can bargain for people that aren't in the room. that really frosts the hell out of me. I don't.
Same as it ever was, though. How we got to it,
but
I don't
know. How else would you do it?
If people have been prevented from entering certain labor markets by collective bargaining agreement for, I don't know, 100 years.
Well,
how else would you do it?
No, what I'm saying,
if you're not in the room yet, you can't be a part of it.
What I'm talking about it's more specific than that. Is how the people in the NFL can put in return for them having a more wide open process for free agency, can the quid pro quo is to put a limit on rookie salaries when rookies aren't represented. There's no reason why a rookie salary should be limited. That because no rookie was at the table when that was signed. You know, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not. You know what I'm saying?
But ex-rookies were.
Well, but I'm not. It's like having the people in a room at General Motors. How about if we're all? Well, of course, to be a union guy, you've probably been there 20 years. Why don't we raise the price, the hourly thing of people who have been here 20 years and over, and lower it under 20? Well, you're not doing your job. To me, you're not doing your fiduciary responsibility when you do stuff like that. That's me. I'm a fair guy.
I don't. Well, I understand what you're saying. I don't know why you hate unions, Tom.
Do you not think there was any first year players part of the players union? I don't know the answer. I'm just asking.
There's nobody yet to be signed. Part of the player unit.
They're not a part of the league, so they would never be allowed in the room.
Well, that's my point.
Well, you can't if you're 10 years old. Just because you're going to be an NFL player in 10 years doesn't mean you get to be a part of.
Well, why
that makes no sense.
In order, the trade off for us having free agency is to take away the bargaining rights of somebody else in our union. That to me sucks. I could never be a part of that.
Well, my point is I think there was first year players in the room.
How could they hit college players in the room?
No, if you're a college player, you're not a part of the league. You would not be a part of the process. You know that.
Okay, but
I'm talking about people that are a part of the league were in the room, and I assume there was first year players, right. 5 year players, 10 year players.
Matty, you're too smart for this. If you were the last guy in that was able to be of a free agent, well, you could never were a free agent. You're
talking about a process that would allow people that aren't even in the league yet to have a voice. That would never happen in
what
any
I'm saying
company.
Is if you are Peyton Manning, and you got a 90 bazillion contract coming in.
Everyone knows what you're saying, but it's wrong.
Why?
Because you're saying people that weren't in the league yet didn't have a voice. Of course they didn't have a voice. You're not in the league.
Okay, but I'm saying, but you said because a first-year player was in there, it's okay.
No, I didn't say it was okay. I'm saying, but that's how a union works. That's how
you don't have a voice if you're not part of it. When I was young.
Wait a second. Let me chime in here, because what I want to say is, if the plumbers union is negotiating a contract with contractors, you know what? The high school kids are not in the room for that, who would become plumbers very, very soon.
Of course not.
So, you know, to the extent that the shops are closed, or that the requirements, or that there's specific requirements for becoming a plumber and doing apprenticeships and all that, they're not represented either. That's the way it works.
I get
it's as simple as that.
I get the mechanism, but in our day,
you just don't like it.
No, in our day, Kevin.
So I go back and ask you, Tom, why do you hate unions?
in our day, a union would never have said, "Okay, I get $18 an hour, and in return for me getting my $3 raise, pay the new guys $12." They never did that, Kevin. When I was a Teamster and in the truck docks, I got paid the same amount as somebody else because I did the same job. The idea
that's a different argument, well, and that's fair.
But I'm saying it comes down to.
But you also couldn't get paid more for being better than anybody else on the dock.
Okay, I mean you.
Okay, so that's a little bit that's something that's a little bit different about an athletics, a players' association, because if you really want it that way, then everybody's going to get the same wage.
I'm saying you shouldn't be able to bargain an uptick for yourself. I don't know whether you shouldn't be able to, whether you should have the morals to not to. You shouldn't bargain a raise for yourself for for somebody else going down in the same union you are. I could never do that, is all I'm saying.
All right. Well, and all I'm saying is, and I will quote one of the great sages that you and I both know, what you expect.
You know, I never expected that. Honestly, never expected that. And I'm not suspicious enough. I get that. The idea.
And by the way, you know, future players are represented to the extent that agents have influence too, and agents definitely have influence over what the players will agree to do.
I don't see where the person ever thought that when you have a draft, I can only negotiate with one rich guy. How was he ever at the disadvantage and me at the advantage? How could that ever have been?
Well, you're not.
Okay, so why?
That's the whole setup. But this is part of why when you're talking about the collective bargaining and the professional sports leagues anyway, you know, they're unions, but they're really not. They're not the same as a normal union. They set up the rules that way. That's just the way they operate.
All right,
if you want to do it differently, I will stand up and salute that and say, let's look at it. But it's the way it is, and I don't get the point of railing against it.
Or why should Steph Curry be part of a union making God knows how much, and part of his deal is the reason why he's paid so much is because you can only pay this kid, as good as you guys say he is, $15 million next year. That sucks.
Stipulated.
I mean, I have this. What I say,
and,
it may not seem
anybody,
like
it's, anybody who doesn't like it should even when they get in the position to bargain for this and have influence on it, should be looking at the next generation coming up and saying, "This was wrong when I came up, and I'm going to stand up and I'm going to say it's wrong for the next generation too, and we'll change it all."
The only concept.
Anybody doing that?
The whole concept of the only place that's
you didn't answer my question.
Probably not. But the whole concept
because now once Williamson gets there, then then he's going to be fine with the system.
If he makes it to his max
so
contract,
so the people who are doing the bargaining are fine with it as is once they get to their big payday.
What's it? 5 years?
I don't know what the term of the standard term.
Four or five.
I think it's
three
four.
Before.
It must be four because you get
some restricted free agent, and there's different rules.
Well, the kid last year was number one pick, got $41 million. I did a little bit of research. Got $41 million, 12 guaranteed.
Okay.
So the high level definition is that rookie contracts are guaranteed for the first 2 years of a player's career, with teams then having the option to extend the contracts in the third and fourth years, as the player's salary increases exponentially each year.
Not exactly. I mean,
I do think it's a 4 year deal but there's options after year two.
Okay, but it's it was 41 last year and 15 was guaranteed. So that leaves you, how much for the next 29 for the next two? So it may increase exponentially, but it's still not even close to this kid. If he's as good as he is, he's going to be the fifth best player in basketball after 3 years, and he's going to be making what? The bottom of the poll?
He's going to be, he'll be making like 10 a year probably or something.
Okay, and
then
there's schlumps that are making
10 or 12.
Yeah, there's schlumps that are making 20.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, in the NBA, it's imperative that you're peaking after your fourth year so you can get the max deal.
The only way, I mean, you could take, if the guys I studied under were still alive, the economic concept that you can have a union that represents people fairly against the monopoly is so economically screwed up. It, by definition, it can't happen. The only way it sort of happens.
I don't think it's a monopoly.
Basketball?
The NBA? Or professional basketball?
NFL?
There's what, like 200 professional basketball leagues? How is it a monopoly?
It's certainly a monopoly in this country.
In this country, there's one big one, yes. But in the world, there's probably 200.
The only reason, the only chance that the unions had, it was in Major League Baseball because Marvin Miller realized how stupid and greedy the owners were, and he played them like a fiddle with the reserve, with the free agents. The arbitration clause.
But here's ultimately the point: is if you want it to be a real union, then it's going to negotiate a standard wage for everybody. That's what unions do. If you're going to call it a players' association, all you're doing is you're negotiating the rules for how the money is going to be divided. That's it.
If you don't
like the way it is, that's fine. Well, I can't argue with you. But that's all you're saying is I don't like it the way it is.
Well, I have a quick question.
Do it differently.
Quick question.
But if you're looking for fairness, or if you're looking for some kind of equity, which is really the purpose of a union, is to ensure that everybody is treated fairly and everybody that makes some base wage, then it's not going to happen. That's not what happens in professional sport leagues, because they want some element of meritocracy in it.
I have a quick question before we go to break, and I could potentially look this up, which I will. What percentage of guys that did come out of high school, and really it was pretty much during the 90s and early 2000s when this really happened in the NBA.
Well, Moses Malone was the first, right?
He was the first, but in the 80s, but he was like, you know, very rare. And then in the 90s it really started happening a lot, and in the early 2000s, and then they changed the rule. I think LeBron might have been the last year that they
allowed
it.
He was the last one, yeah.
But what percentage of high school guys to the NBA, quote unquote, were a success?
What do you mean by that? 5 years made the retired, we got the retirement?
I would say, I mean, I guess it depends on your definition of success. But if you were drafted out of high school, then I think you were expected to be a great player.
Yeah.
Not just a good player, but a great
player.
Yeah,
well, so you got your Kobe Bryants and your Kevin Garnett, and there were some of those.
Moses.
There were others that were like a Tyson Chandler who had a decent career. But there were a lot of busts. There were a lot of Eddie Currys. There's a long list. We'd have to go do a little legwork.
I'd say
I'm going to do some research.
Give Matt something to do over the break.
Yeah, I'm going to do some research because I'm kind of interested. Yeah, I mean, you always read about the LeBrons and the Kobes and the Kevin Garnetts and the Moses Malones, but there was Keon Clarks and no-name guys that were drafted out of high school that there's a lot of those.
All right. Well, look how many great high school guys are busting college. SB Futures. I'll find him here. I'm on a different page. SB Futures up 11 now. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so.
I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Socks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Right here. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. S&P futures up 11 and a quarter, down up 126. NASDAQ up 38. We're going to end this week maybe with a big rally. We'll see. Yesterday we were choppy all day. We ended up down 103 points. We were down way more than that. We actually rallied into the close and backed off a little bit. S&Ps were down 9, NASDAQ down 29. So we, the pre-market, we seem to have gotten all that back and maybe a little bit more. DAX up 68.6. FTSE up 42.6, CAC around up 19.4. I continue to believe that some type of success in the Chinese situation is absolutely buried in the market here, so which seems to be showing overseas as well. Nikkei down 38, which is an outlier, 0.2%. Shanghai up 52, it's almost 2%, 2804. These guys haven't over 2800 in a real long time. So these Chinese markets are really making a comeback after being down horribly in the last few months. Hang Seng up 186.6%. We've got other, plus there are these rumors of some massive new stimulus from China. And every time we see stimulus, we see markets go up. We pull the stimulus back, markets go down. This is, it's not healthy, but it's been working now for so long of a time that, well, I guess it's going to continue to happen. Oil up 46 cents, 57.42. Brent up 34, 67.41. So those with a quick mind, that's $9.99 is the spread. Natural gas, 268. RBOB, 162. Anybody buying gas, seeing their gas up. This is up from 135, I'm going to say the first of the year, maybe mid-December. So that's almost 30 cents in gasoline. That's a lot. Home heating oil, 2.04. And we've got gold down $1.60. Still 1326 hanging in there. Silver up one penny. Not too much going on in the precious metals. Copper up another 4 cents, however, pushing towards $3 again with this recovering China theme. Maddie, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a crash on the Dan Ryan blocking the left lane inbound at 95th Street. So that's causing delays as folks navigate around that. No issues on I-57, the Bishop Ford. Stevenson traffic starting to build around Cicero near Midway, but no accidents or stalled vehicles to report. Eisenhower looks good as well. Kennedy and the Edens are all quiet, so that's good news. Off the expressways, there was a rollover crash earlier this morning with entrapment at Shermer Road and Harrison. The person that was trapped in the vehicle has been extricated, but crews are on the scene there. That's in the northern suburbs up near Glenview in that area. So that
extricated, I like that, man.
Yes, that's how that's what they have written here. So I don't think I would have used that word, but it sounded good. So hopefully everyone's okay there, but that's a significant crash on side streets. And we always talk about how do you have a rollover crash on side streets, but they do happen. So crews have that area blocked off. One other area issue of note, looks like northwestern suburbs. We have a stalled vehicle at Hart Road and Northwest Highway. That's US 14 that's causing some delays. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, it'll be a pleasant winter day in Chicagoland. Lots of sunshine today, a high of 35, so that'll feel nice. Right now it is clear and 26 degrees downtown, going up to 35. For our Phoenix listeners, lots of rain in the forecast today and a high of just 50, so not so good down in the Valley of the Sun. Rainy, a high of 50. Right now it is rainy and 39 degrees. In sports, the Suns blew out the Cavs in NBA basketball last night, 111-98. Bulls were off. They're at Orlando tonight. Blackhawks were off as they continue their push for the playoffs. They host a huge game tonight at the UC against Colorado. I'll actually be at that game, my second Blackhawks game of the season. Blackhawks were off last night, but they were leapfrogged in the playoff standings. So right now, the Blackhawks are 1 point behind Minnesota and 4 points behind Dallas, who hold the two wildcard spots in the West, the last two spots. But the Blackhawks are tied with the Arizona Coyotes, who won last night, beating the Canucks in overtime 3-2. And the Blackhawks are tied with Colorado, who they play tonight. So huge game tonight at the UC, and that place will be rocking as those two teams are 1 point out of the playoffs. Lastly, college hoops last night, Arizona blew out Cal 76-51.
Chief. Much as Hawks play, and I don't know that they, I don't know hockey all that much, but it looks to me like they're not as good as some of these other teams. I mean, they got spanked pretty good by Boston. Boston was just bigger and stronger. And I think the Hawks still have a little of that. All their good guys are 5'5", it seems. But you cannot even begin to question their hustle in these last few weeks. They're playing like every game is a playoff game. I mean, it's fun to watch. For those guys those people who only watch hockey, like, for playoffs, because that's the only time they try.
Like me?
You'll see tonight. These guys are hustling. Tonight's game will be like a playoff game among, you know, two teams that maybe, you know, aren't the best, but they'll be out there giving it their all, which is, you know, on a professional level, those guys do that. Hockey players pretty much do it every night, I think. I mean,
Yeah, I can't. I'm not a hockey expert. I can't tell if they weren't. I wouldn't be able to tell if they weren't hustling. They always look like they're hustling in hockey.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They talk about guys that, no matter how good they are,
I think it's because you're on skates and you're on ice. There's no way to just stand around.
Those guys absolutely.
Right, you can sort of tell when the puck goes into the corners who's working hard and who isn't.
Yeah, but I mean
that's true.
I think those guys. I'm not going to say any other people don't. Honestly, love the game. That if they weren't getting paid, those dudes would be playing hockey. Not the basketball players.
Right.
Not the basketball players. I mean, I think Larry Bird would have been playing out, you know, and Magic Johnson at some park if they weren't playing for the NBA. Hell, I played 5 days a week basketball. I loved the game. I never thought of getting paid. God, I was too terrible. But
Something else about the Blackhawks, they have gotten younger this season all of a sudden, over the course of the season. A few of the acquisitions they've made and the guys that they've elevated, they are suddenly a younger and somewhat faster team than they were at the beginning of the season.
There's no comparison how much, I don't even know who the hell they are, but the third and fourth lines the first few games this year were an embarrassment, Kevin. Now they're not. They're quicker. The guy they got from, Phoenix begins with an S. I can't pay attention to all the names, but he has done amazingly well on the line setting up that DeBrincat kid, because that kid's fast as all get out. That little guy DeBrincat, and what he's got, how many goals he's got in his second year. But this guy has really helped him. Skyler or Sailor or something that they got from Phoenix really has made this that line go. I mean, he's involved in virtually every one of the goals that the DeBrincat guy has. So, I mean, I don't know the lines, and of course they switch them around a lot, but I mean, I just think they're kind of fun to watch again, and they're not as good as they were a few years ago, but I think they at least really want to make the playoffs.
DeBrincat, by the way, who you mentioned, who's a really good defenseman, he just turned 22.
Is he a defenseman? He's not a defenseman.
Yeah, he is.
isn't he?
Oh, he's
or no,
like,
sorry,
he's got like 40 goals.
He's a winger.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a right winger, not a defenseman.
But who's on his line?
But he just turned 22 years old. That's how young he is.
But he's another pair. He's 5'6" or something.
He's he's listed at 5'7", so he's probably 5'5".
Yeah. But I mean, he can move. I mean, there's no doubt, but you can't have everybody like that. You got to have a couple of guys that can.
But to Kevin's point, pulled up their roster here. You have, you know, the older guys, you know, quote unquote old guys. Keith, who's 35.
He's actually having a good year.
And Seabrook, who's 33. And you have Crawford, who's 34, although he hasn't played much, this year because of injury. And, you know, Kane is getting up there. But the majority of this team are really young guys. Guys that were born in the early to mid 90s, that are just starting to come into their own.
Who's the guy I'm talking about with the guy from Phoenix? He's a bigger guy and passes very well. I mean, they've been involved in a lot. I'm saying they even sized
Dylan them. Strome?
Yeah, that's him, I think.
Is that him?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and he's only 21 years old.
I think they picked Phoenix's pocket with him.
He's 6'3", 200 pounds.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
But he's only 21. I mean, their team has changed. I will say, too, you know, full disclosure, I don't know anything about hockey. But their young coach, who got a lot of grief because he was the replacement of a legend, he seems to be doing a good job. Rallied the troops, kind of got them organized, and all of a sudden they're right in the thick of it.
But you can't
got them pointing in the right direction. Matt, you know more about hockey than you think you do because you know basketball so well.
Yep. I'm going to say, though.
And so it's a goal game. So in goal games, it's the same spacing principles. And the same, got to get the puck to the front of the net, just like you got to get the ball to the post, even if it's to kick it back out. And give and go is always give and go, and screen and roll is, it's sort of the same in hockey. There's interference, so you can't just set a pick, but, there are some rubs that they do in that. And so, you know, as you watch it, start thinking basketball a little bit. And you will get hockey, way more than you think you do.
The only big difference is the offside. Is in basketball, you can essentially cherry pick.
Yeah. I do know the rules, which helps. I will say, too, when I started getting into soccer a little bit several years ago, same principle helped me. Knowing basketball helped me follow the game and understand the spacing and the passing and the pick and replace that you see in basketball all the time, you know, where a guy you screen and then replace the guy you screen for and to keep the spacing. In soccer, they have that down, and it's such a beautiful thing when you watch it. If you watch it through the mind of basketball, it's very easy to follow.
The big difference
you could go sit down and watch a lacrosse game and get the same thing.
Well, the huge difference in hockey in my lifetime is the getting rid of the two-line offside. Where you basically had a really, it was like soccer. You had to get, the first guy had to bring the puck up. If you passed from behind your blue line to across the center line, that was a two-line offside. Now.
Yeah, and that made Bobby Orr incredibly great because you had a defenseman who could skate the puck into essentially bring it to the basket, what would be in basketball, the front court. You had one guy who could always get it there and get it there fast and then still find people.
Yeah, I mean, you had some.
He was a rare bird in those days.
I mean, most of your defensive teams in those days, you had a skater, and you had a guy who could mix it up with people. You had a, Pat Stapleton next to a Doug Jarrett type of thing. You always had a big guy and a guy, a Pierre Palat, who could get the puck up the ice, sort of like Bobby Orr, but not as good. I mean, nobody was as good as Bobby Orr, but. I still think he might have been
back to basketball, Matt. What did you find during the break? Because I did some looking too.
Well, I pulled up a list of all. I couldn't find an actual write up on it, but I was able to pull up a list of all the guys that were drafted out of high school straight to the NBA, and a lot of the names are no name guys. That's for sure.
Yeah, what so did you they find? I pulled up a couple where they rank them. So you get LeBron James and Kobe Bryant at the top of the list, Moses Malone, Kevin Garnett, Dwight Howard, Tracy McGrady. Those are the guys that show up atop the list, and then it starts to drop off. Although every one of these leaves Tony Parker out of it, which I don't understand because he came straight out of high school. He just came out of high school from Europe. But then you start falling to good players, Monte Ellis and Lou Williams or Rashard Lewis, Jermaine O'Neal. Al Jefferson and guys like that, but boy, when you get to the bottom of this list, you are st- not recognize, or names that you recognize because the guy got drafted, but eventually never went on to amount to anything. So who knows the great Robert Swift?
Well, but I'm going to say Kevin
Ricky Sanchez.
It was really
Desagana Jop.
I always think of Kwame Brown, who Michael Jordan drafted number one overall, ahead of, you know, some other guys that were obviously turned out to be a lot better, and he was horrendous, and he bounced around for five or six years.
He was terrible, yes. Now there's one in the NBA now, Thon Maker of the Bucks.
Yeah, I think he
came
just
straight out of high school because he's an international player. He's from all the way from the Toronto area.
Really?
I think he just got traded, too.
Yeah.
And I guess he has a little brother.
He's not on the Bucks anymore?
I think he just got traded, like, last week before the trade deadline. But, yeah, he was drafted by the Bucks.
Well, I'm going to say two things. One, when this first
started
happening, you're maybe now, because you've got the developmental league and so forth, I can still talk. There is some attempt on the NBA level to teach, I use the term fundamental basketball, but the difference between having guys, you want your guys to spend at least 2 or 3 years with the Digger Phelpses of the world and the Bobby Knights, because those guys, they have nothing better to do than to teach this basketball, and you get to practice 5-6 days a week, right, Kevin? I mean, it's a totally different world for an 18-year-old than all of a sudden the professional guys. Half of them are hurt. Half of them don't practice. They just shoot around. You got 3 games a week, sometimes 4.
Because of the schedule, sometimes they'll go 3 weeks without a single practice.
Well, they'll call it a practice, but it's really more of a shoot-around.
They'll do a shoot-around, yeah. But because they, like you said, it's travel, it's 3 games a week, it's resting guys, and they won't have like a real full-on practice sometimes for 2-3 weeks
at a time. Those guys need a full-on scrimmage like most people need a hangnail, right? I mean, when they're playing 4 games a week. Once in a while, they'll do it just, you know, for the guys that are on the end of the bench, but it's you know, you're not going to get your best players to play hard in practice. Why would they? I mean, what I'm saying is you weren't designed to do that. Now you have the developmental league, but I don't think those guys. I think you really miss the college coaching. It's a tremendous developmental thing for people. Now, whether that should restrict you from your livelihood, I think not. But once you, my whole point to this, and I know I'm not getting there. I very seldom get to the points these days. Is when you start talking about going up against the monopoly, it's all this other stuff kind of shakes out. You can get yourself your peace, you can get yourself your union, you can get your stuff, but it still doesn't stop the American principle that this guy should be able to go to 25 potential employers and get his best deal. You can't every other business in this country. I mean, if your son or daughter was an accountant coming out of Notre Dame or Illinois or wherever it is, some good school or even a crummy school, and they got drafted and said, okay, your first year you can only make $25,000. Everybody would be so in outrage. But this is the opiate of the people. No, we love the draft.
Yeah, no, I get that.
I mean, we love the draft.
But on the other hand, you also can't become a CPA without completing college, and you need a certain number of, you know, you need the hours. So you're still, even that. You know, you can go work as an accountant without your CPA, but you know that's a big money deal.
Well, to be a doctor, you got to pass the board.
And even that is locked out, depending on, you know, meeting an educational requirement.
I don't disagree. I mean, I don't have a problem with that, except for, again, I keep bringing the guy up, and he's been dead forever. I mean, Milton Friedman used to always totally rail on two industries, which is interesting because they're both kind of. In terms of monopoly power now, talk about going the way of the dodo bird. He used to rail about taxi cab drivers, which obviously are not much of a monopoly anymore, and doctors. The idea in his mind that doctors, what's the doctors association, not the physicians, something.
AMA.
The AMA, how they could determine the amount of medical schools, in his mind was absolutely ludicrous. It was like Major League Baseball. No, you can't have another team. We like the amount of teams we got. You can't go somewhere else. So, you know,
and I understand that argument. The question is, should there be somebody certifying medical schools? And I don't. I think Friedman would say no. That people, the market will figure out which medical schools are training doctors well and which aren't. But there's the counter argument to that is that you don't want schools awarding certifications to doctors who are not good at what they do.
Well, you go back to should there be I'll use the term regulation. I go back to the example I always use. How do you know that the toaster you bought is not going to blow up? Do you want the federal government having 48 people in every toaster manufacturer writing up procedures and doing every kind of...
Oh, definitely, I do.
You definitely don't want that. Or do you have somebody who says, I'll tell you what, I will test the toasters for you, like UL, and I'll charge, you know, whatever. And I don't care really what their procedures are. I'm going to test the toaster. If the toaster is no good, I won't put my stamp on it. I don't know, Kevin, if you were a kid, if you were ever sent out by your mom or dad to go buy an extension cord or something and came back with one that didn't say you all approved, you were sent back. You know? So should there be somebody who checks out important stuff that people buy or that certifies a doctor? The answer is probably yes. Does it have to be the government? The answer is no. Should it be the people in the industry as a way to regulate the amount of doctors?
They self regulate? That always works.
It always works. I'm going to say that that's interesting, Kevin, because if people actually give a crap about what they're doing, and I'll use the When I started in the business of being a market maker, despite what, you know, the external view of the world is sometimes, the people who traded in these competitive pits really liked the idea that they were in a competitive pit. It was pretty important to them to maintain the discipline that this was a public auction and there were rules. Now, a lot of the rules had to do with if you made a secret trade across the pit that nobody heard, I got screwed, so I'm probably coming at you with fists flying, saying, what are you doing, you know, pocketing that trade? That's supposed to be for everybody, and I could have got my piece. I'm not saying it was philanthropic. It probably certainly was not. But it was designed in such a way where there's honor among thieves, for lack of a better term. In a competitive system, you don't have to like people in there, but if it's competitive, it's okay. But once you started doing weird stuff, like taking, okay, the pit's not where the competition is, it's not between the orders themselves, it's between, say, fees for the orders. So another exchange can compete with you. Well, now the system of self-policing started to break down, because part of the competitive trip for, like, the major firms was, we're not gonna enforce the rules here. You can do whatever you want. You can cross orders. You can front run orders. You can do stuff here. We'll let you do it. We just want the quote business. Now, the law enforcement became part of the quote competitive process. Now, the people in the SEC and the people in FINRA at the time were collectively, not individually, I would never call anybody stupid individually, were collectively too stupid to realize that. And the firms drove a knife right through the thing. So the idea that today's world is better than that world in terms of a competitive standpoint is crazy. So, I mean, I like to see things competitive. And I honestly think in Major League Baseball, Kevin and Maddie, I'll stand by this. If everybody was a free agent, the salaries would go down, not up. The Players Association, starting with Marvin Miller for 50 years now, has put one over on these guys. But because they have control, they don't care, the owners. I honestly believe if everybody was a free agent, instead of holding the idea that you would hold up two people a year, the Trout and Machado, and then one guy gets $30 bazillion per year for the rest of his life, and now I'm a third baseman and I say, well, that guy hits .320, I just hit .299, I deserve .25. Well, sure you do. The numbers show you do. Yet the 30 is a mirage, because the 30 is because only one guy is available for auction. Those two things together are genius. For the players' union, the owners.
Yeah, well, the owners want order. They love order.
Yep.
They love an orderly system, and it is sort of orderly. But the athletes love limiting the supply. It's great, isn't it?
Well, it is if the next guy gets to go to an arbitration. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any difference. You'd be the one guy making 30, and the guy next to you is making 2. But that's not going to happen if there's an arbitration system, right?
Yep, that's not going to happen. And arbitration has done a lot to drive up salaries, or as Jerry Reinsdorf once said, it forces me to pay what my stupidest competitor pays.
Oh, that's exactly right. Kevin, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up 1075, NASDAQ Futures up 3450. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Frank Fee calling in because we missed his sage advice on Monday as we were off this week. We can't go a week without Frank. SP Futures up 11 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures up 36.50. Frank, I hope you had some puts in this Stamps.com and in Kraft Heinz. Stamps.com down $100. 50%.
Wow.
And Kraft Heinz is down 21% as they've gotten a procedure, SEC subpoena on accounting procedural things. What in God's name is that? Procurement procedures. What are procurement procedures in regard to buy stuff? I mean, how can you say
with
that?
The stamp stop that, well, I guess it's inventory. You could misstate inventory.
I suppose, yeah.
For we saw Billy Saul Estes did it in our youth.
Stamps.com, the reason they crashed, the headline anyway, is they discontinued their partnership with USPS.
So now they're no stamps.com.
So
how do you not
it's
have
probably hard to be stamps.com if you're not partnered with USPS.
Why is it still $100?
I'm gonna read into this here, but that was the headline.
They can't be.
It's sort of like why couldn't Ed Burke's firm Google who owned the Burger King down there?
Well, yeah, that's I would, if you started getting shoved around by somebody in Baltimore, you might make a complaint to the district attorney. You wouldn't just take it like you do if you're from Chicago.
McDonald's crashes after canceling a partnership with cows.
Yeah.
is that kind of
yeah, it's like, God. Well, Frank, what do you make of this? Look, we're down yesterday. We're right back up. We're down. I think that the market is putting about a 90% chance on something where two guys can get together and say they got a China deal. Even though it probably is the same as it was before, or maybe worse, who knows? But we're not.
I think it might be the car tariffs. Isn't that the one on the horizon right now? The
EU. That's the other way.
Yeah. So maybe there's an agreement. It could be they said, well, he's going to move it forward a month or two.
Well,
he's a Ken doll. Good looking, but no balls.
Well,
I don't think he can. I don't think he can go forward with this.
Which one? The tariff or China? We got so many balls in the air with
China. I don't mind the hardball with China. I mean, the South Korea import and export numbers are one of the scariest things. That, down 11 and 17% respectively. So, I don't know much more than that surface comment.
Well, what,
but I think,
I don't see
somebody, worry about the EU.
Some of these numbers, they're not tradable, Frank. I mean, I would never even consider. But some of these little anecdotal numbers. Did you see a Philly Fed number yesterday?
I did not.
It was supposed to be positive 14. Now, these are numbers that if they're positive, they're growing. Came in at minus 4. It was supposed to come in at positive 10, came in at minus 4 or something. Like 14-point difference in the estimates. Who are these estimators? They better get some new estimators.
They're the best.
Yeah. That's still the world's greatest line, Eddie. Who are all these alligators? Who is that?
You said it before. It's Old Man Daly.
Old Man Daly. It's been alleged. Who are all these alligators? I mean, that's a good question.
So, I don't know. I have some European clients who actually call me up and ask me for advice. And they are so unspeakably bearish right now, the technical people.
I think
their question is, why aren't we going down?
The economy's over there. Well, did you see the difference? I'm going to say, let me dig it up here. Take me a second. I want the exact number. The difference in money supply numbers over the last 3 weeks is absolutely astounding. I've never seen it. Other than I was mentioning it yesterday, Frank, I've never seen a change like this. Other than like 9/11 or something, for God's sake, where we've gone from 3.5% growth, the 3 month now is 6.1. We went from I mean, 6.1 increase in money supply is either an incredibly booming economy where the Fed got caught behind, which is possible, or it's an absolute panic. Adjusted M2, 3 months from October to January, 6%. And I think if you looked at the numbers from 12 months, 4.3. 6 months, 4.5. So look how much they've goosed it in the last 45 days, ever since, what's his name, got paddled and came out and said, I'm with you guys, Powell. I mean,
Well, and the problem is, you and like 10 other people look at money supply.
Which I don't quite get how all of a sudden we don't look at that anymore.
I don't either, but you are the only person I ever see talk about money supply.
It's still here every week. There's got to be reports. We got reports. Now, if you look at the weeklies, it's not as bad. So, I mean, in full disclosure, the weeklies are only up to 4.9, but even so, 52 weeks, 4, 26 weeks, 4.1, 13 weeks, 4.9. So the January number the monthly number, January, is from seasonally adjusted, is up like $100 billion, for God's sake. I mean, it's a reasonable number.
Yeah, and you know, I just Googled money supply and news, and it's Switzerland's M3 critique of monetary theory, UAE Central Bank, Venezuela money supply, China M2. There's nothing about the United States. Zimbabwe starts currency trading.
Well, when you see what's happened, well, what's his name, Bullard, yesterday came out. He was all over the tapes. He doesn't want to see the balance sheet dropped. He thinks we should actually cut interest rates. He thinks they're too high. How can it be too high, under 3, in an economy that's allegedly booming? I mean, what planet are these? I mean,
if they want to cut something, cut student debt interest. If you want to stimulate the economy, and make people feel better.
Did you? We haven't mentioned these in a while. I don't know if any of the listeners remember. I mean, I'm not one of these guys that likes to pontificate out on this stuff. I'll pontificate on individual stuff that I see, but the Chiefs' 3 trickle-up theory rules. Can you name them, Frank?
Ah, boy.
You just did
one. It was student loan.
Student loan. Drop the student loans by just a percent.
Right.
Half, you know.
And they'd still be at 5.
Still be at 5.
Maybe 5.5.
Yeah, but still be at 5. I
wouldn't mind price fixing on health care. One thing I've been investigating, the PCE, and boy, health care is just...
Well, somebody...
Trying to figure out what they do with that's impossible.
Somebody, I think our friend Kevin, just sent me a thing regarding how the main senator wants to... the other two, by the way, are increase the ridiculous... $3,000 a year is all you can deduct if you have a capital loss.
Oh, right. I agree.
And the other is, let's cut off credit card interest at 15%. If you can't make money at 15, get out of the business. You know, there's no reason to charge people 24, 28. That's insane. It's absolutely insane. I mean, if you do those three things, I think you will find the economy gets healthier pretty darn fast.
Well, in our youth, that's when all the credit card processors moved to North Dakota or South Dakota.
In our youth, we didn't have a credit card.
Because they didn't have usury laws.
Well, and they got a Supreme Court. Listeners, I think, probably know this, but if they don't, this will astound you. If you have a state, say, sales tax, you have to pay the state sales tax, correct? If you have speeding law, 70 miles an hour, or 65, or 50, or 20, you have to obey that state's speeding law, correct?
Yes.
But most states, even to this day, have usury laws. Yet you do not have to obey the state's usury law if you are not in the state. So this is a Supreme Court, it's got to be, you know, some right-wing Supreme Court decision. So if you have I was going to say the First National Bank of Chicago. If you had one, Northern Trust, for instance, I don't know that they have any branches out of Illinois. Let's say they don't. If Northern Trust has a credit card, they can only charge 12%. If they put a branch in Dakota or South Carolina. That's why all your credit card stuff comes from there. They can charge 24 in the state of Illinois, which to me is absolutely incredible, Frank. I mean, that's like saying if you have Ohio license plates, you can go 90 down to Dan Ryan. Actually, if you have temporary plates, you can go 90 down to Dan Ryan. Because
I think it comes down to who, and I'm not a lawyer, I just pretend I'm one on Stocks and Jocks. It depends on who controls interstate commerce. And so speeding probably doesn't come under the heading of interstate commerce.
Probably. I'm sure there's a reason for it, but I'm saying you should be able to have your own state law. You know, they're saying, no, if you're out of state, the law doesn't apply to you. Why can't you sell? Why can't you buy marijuana online from Colorado? Right, it's the same thing in my mind. It's legal in Colorado, you know, and you're buying it from Colorado. Yeah, you can't do that here, but banks can move to another thing and essentially charge more than essentially put the banks out of business here. Which is interesting.
Right.
I'm really surprised, Frank. A lot of this has to do, and you know, another guy from the trading floor, our questions have more to do with what is going on to cause the lack of competition. That, to me, is the single biggest economic problem of our time. It's not insurance companies charging too much. It's there's too few insurance companies. They don't compete anymore. And if we start walking down this road in every industry, and Lou said it the best, we essentially have become a very fascist economic system for companies in every industry with their nose up the ass of government. I mean, you can't deal with that. Every industry is a cartel, for God's sake. I mean, and that's not the American
industry. Hospitals now.
Yeah, the hospitals.
I mean, the mergers are amazing.
Yep, and then how many hospitals, the one they just bought the place here in Chicago, they bought the three, who's the group now, man? They just bought the three hospitals, they're immediately closing one.
And they're closing Westlake and Melrose.
Well, and they, Audrey and I were out in Chicago Heights. She has a listing out there. They're closing St. Francis, and the thing's coming down. Now, you can't tell me, Frank, that somebody couldn't turn that into a immediate care center to compete with one of the hospitals. They don't want them to. It's coming down. Whoever the theys are. I mean, this lack of competition is absolutely dramatic.
Joe writes in, Chief, and you can follow us on Twitter, at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. Unless it's changed since I was in the finance business, Illinois had no usury law. That certainly wasn't set up by right wingers. Did you say it was set up by right wingers?
No, I'm saying the idea.
We've had.
I think Illinois has
always been a democratically controlled Congress or House.
No, my point
in
was
Illinois.
My point was the Supreme Court decision. It says as long as you're from out of state, that if you're Citigroup sitting in South Carolina, you don't have to worry about any state's usury law. That's what I accused being a big business decision, which I will stand by the way. That, right? I mean, I thought Illinois did have a 12%. Maybe they don't. Maybe they don't anymore. I thought they did back in the day. But how many states have usury law? Google that. I'll bet most of them still do. And I bet none of them are 24%, like credit cards. There's a reason why these guys, have you ever gotten a credit card mailed to you from an address in Illinois? I'm going to say I never have. So, I mean, who's ever wrote that in, he might be right, but why wouldn't you get, why is there?
Well, what they do is they incorporate their credit card business in a state with no usury laws.
Right.
And that's how they get away with
it. But I'm saying, none of that.
So it's a subsidiary. It's not.
I get it. But my point is, there's never been one from Illinois that I've gotten. So if Illinois doesn't have usury laws, it's recent that they don't. Because I think they did have it. I think they were 12%. But I'm not, again, I'm talking off the top of my head here a little bit. But Maddie, if you were to Google states with usury laws, I bet Illinois pops up.
I'm looking for it. It's not as easy to find as I thought it would be.
It probably isn't. But I mean, these are, here's the question. It's not whether.
Here's what I found according to bankinglaw.uslegal.com. Illinois, legal rate of interest is 5%. General usury limit is 9%. Judgment rate is 9%.
Okay. What about other states? I mean, there's got to be a lot of them.
They have a sentence for every single state. Name a state, I'll tell you what it is.
It can't be Carolina. Can't be one of them.
North Carolina?
They come from north or south, Frank? I don't know. I know they come from Dakota.
North Carolina, it says legal rate of interest is 8%. General usury limit is 8%. South Carolina.
That's not North Carolina.
South Carolina, legal rate of interest is 8.75%. Judgment rate is 14%.
I don't think.
What about Delaware? They had something called, I think, Financial Services Act.
I don't think you're getting the right number. You're getting a judgment number like that.
This lists everything. So it some states it lists usury, some it doesn't list usury. But it tells you.
But I'm saying the usury they're talking about there is not. I think that's government usury. That's like what the states and cities can charge people and stuff. I don't think that's what credit cards can charge people.
Could be. South Carolina clearly does not list a usury at all.
Okay, well then, yeah.
North Carolina does. Carolina just says legal rate of interest is 8.75.
How about South Dakota's probably doesn't either.
South Dakota doesn't list a usury either.
Right, so there you go.
It says legal rate of interest is 15%, judgment rate is 12%, but it does not list a usury at all.
Right, so that's why they're there. They're in South Carolina and South Dakota.
Right. But North Carolina does.
And is there a number for Delaware?
Delaware, it says legal rate of interest is 5% over the Federal Reserve rate. But there's no usury, there's no judgment rate listed.
So that's why those places go there.
Yep, that's why. My own company is affiliated with Delaware.
Well, most people,
even though I don't think we have anything in Delaware.
Well, it used to be that was your, everybody had their corporations in Delaware because it was the hardest state to get sued in, basically. And it was the best corporate law. Matter of fact, the CBOE was organized in Delaware as a not-profit. And you know what? Virtually everything is all organized in Delaware using that same spot in the law. It's country clubs.
Joe writes back and says, consumer loans were not regulated back then. Indiana law was 36%. Our Illinois offices charged far higher rates.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying that's why banks moved out of here. I think if you get a credit card from a bank in Illinois, like a Lakeside Bank gave you one. It's interesting, though, because they're trying to come out with a credit card. I wonder, maybe. Joe's probably right. Knows more about it. But, I mean, that was the way you got around it. Okay. I mean, what good is usury law if you just get around it?
Well,
you contribute enough money to state legislators, they're going to change the law.
Oh, sure. Well, my point being is, it's not so much that there ought to be a law, and I'm sure Joe and I agree on that. The idea is, how is it that you can have zero interest rates for basically 8 years to these big banks? And at the end of the 8 years, the credit card interest rate is up, not down. Therein lies the problem. How is it that the Frank Fays of the world, the Matt Webbers, the Tom Howes of the world, or our listeners, don't get together and say, wow, why don't we send out credit card notices to applications to people that are over 600 on their credit scores, and we'll charge them 12. It seems to me there's plenty of money there. Why doesn't somebody do that is the question. Are they prevented somehow? Is the government all over them? Do they make it too big of a deal? Is it too hard to enter the business? Is it becoming such? I mean, in my day, when these things first came out, every single bank, Maddie, had a credit card. Continental Bank, First National Bank. Everybody came out with their own Visa card. It was what they call them. And
isn't that still the case?
No,
the big banks, they all have credit cards.
They don't have their own with their own.
Well, like Chase has a Visa Chase card.
Well, I'm saying, but PTI could have a credit card, but it's not ours. We put our name on one of.
Well,
three
yeah,
companies.
It's all Visa, MasterCard, and American Express.
That's my point.
But it wasn't it always?
No, but the banks had their own processing centers.
Yeah, Diners Club.
No, I'm saying the banks.
I know, but weren't they always back-ended by one of the big?
Not originally.
Definitely in my lifetime they
are. Yeah, not originally. They originally did it themselves, and then they said this is inefficient.
Right, because it's all Discover, MasterCard,
right.
Visa, and the American Express.
Right, but in those days.
Discover was Sears.
Yeah, Sears was Discover.
Right. Did Discover ever exist outside of Sears?
It became Discover when Morgan Stanley, I think, but Sears credit card was a huge deal.
Definitely know that, but I didn't. Did Sears actually do the process? Did they have a division where they actually did all the processing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or were they partnered with, you know, company on the back end? That's what I'm wondering.
No, what I'm saying, Marshall Fields, I think they had their own guys that did, they had a group of people did the credit cards.
So when did that change? Like 80s?
Probably earlier than
or
that.
Or 70s?
Yeah, probably earlier than that, where they, one after another, came and said, look, you can fire all these people. We'll do it for you.
Right, because now, yeah, even the big banks all have their own credit card, but it's still just Visa or MasterCard or whatever.
Well, I'm saying we could have one. I mean, there's one with the Blackhawk card, you know, that type of, you know. The Notre Dame has one, right? Or the Notre Dame Credit Union certainly has one, right, Frank?
I think the sports team's ones are Capital One.
Well, no, they're licensed. So, yeah, they do it.
But, I mean, you're not... Well, my point is that you would think that with interest rates being zero for a friggin' decade, that somebody would come out with one, even if it's the high-end people, that are 12%. I mean, these numbers are... I mean, this is how you get skunked, even if you're watching this stuff, and I try to. Everybody in the firm here, I got them as a member of Sam's Club and Costco, right? So somehow or another, they screwed up the Sam's Club membership, so I went out to the place. You got to get your picture taken. So I go over to these bleeps, and it takes me an hour to screw around, and we got like six people, right? You would think it would be that big. Well, on the thing is like a credit card, right? So my Sam's card is a quote a credit card, and the first day I shop and I had a phone call from somebody who was a client, so the lady says something about should I just leave it on the card? I shake my head, and I spent like $200. It was no big deal. So I'm here and I'm sitting there. A month later, I'm going, you know, I never got that damn bill from these idiots. Sure enough, the bill makes it up to the office here, and it's I don't know what happened there a month before one. I never got it. It's like $45 for a late fee and 24% interest. So it's 2% on the $200, which is whatever the hell that is per month. $4 plus four. So it was like close to $50 was the fine for being 1 month late on a $200 bill.
Yikes.
I mean, what the bleep?
And that is why the Waltons are the richest family on earth.
Well, let me ask you this. You guys are not public transportation types, so you probably don't even know about this. But for those of us, you know, that schlump around in public transportation, the original Ventra card that came out when the city partnered with Ventra, what was it, 10 years ago, was a MasterCard. You could actually, if you had money on it, it was essentially a debit card. If you had money on it, you could go to Walgreens, you could go anywhere and just swipe it as if it was a double debit card, and it would debit whatever you had on that account. And then the new iteration of that card that just came out last year is just back to a regular CTA card. So they ended that partnership. But that was the weirdest thing.
Well,
pass was a credit card.
Well, that was a huge complaint with that, wasn't it? What was the bitch? It was something.
I don't know. Because, I mean, it was just a debit card, so it's not, if you didn't have money on it, you couldn't use it. So it's not like people were, you know, getting charged late fees or anything like that.
I seem to remember that there was access problems for certain segments of the population.
Yeah, there was some problem with it. But, you know, this is what, I mean, I get, once in a while, you know, something screwy happens. You'll get, like, a double bill from the gas company, you'll get something. Or even this issue with the Sam's Club card.
Jill writes in, Chief, for God's sake, get an online statement.
God.
Get a computer.
Get a computer. Hey, well, tell her if she's coming over for dinner, I'll have something special for her. if you look at the part of the population, you know, I'm up on this stuff a little bit. Obviously, I'm not up on it totally because I got fleeced by these guys for $50. But I'm up on it. Can you imagine somebody who has a language problem and doesn't know how phone systems work and how you hit the zero to get to the person above you? Can you imagine the average Hispanic person or somebody who lives in Inglewood or somebody, and I'm not demeaning anybody. I would never do that. Them going through the... shall we say what's the term, Frank? The error discovery mode of Commonwealth Edison or the gas company or one of these credit card companies. They've got to be, can you imagine the heat those people get if all of a sudden they got a gas, if you're speaking broken English and you're trying to get through to these morons on these phone calls? I mean, I can't even imagine being like that. I mean, Maddie, you and I know people in the building here that work in the building there. Hispanic, and they speak pretty good English, but they'll come to us sometime where they'll say, I've got this problem, what do I do? I said, call them. I call them, and I don't get anywhere. I mean, can you imagine what the...
Well, anything, you know,
I once negotiated a medical bill from $8,000 to $8,000 for a Price reporter's father.
Eight to eight?
On our floor. I mean, how much? To get a second mortgage.
You said from $8,000 to $8,000.
Because he owed $80,000, and okay. I knew that I had paid $15,000. I just called up, had a power of attorney. I said, I'm representing so-and-so. Let's talk about this bill. I know that the Blue Cross Blue Shield price is $15,000.
Well,
it was two stents. And I said, we'll give you $8,000 cash now. They took it.
Huh,
and well, he would have paid them $80,000.
I can't. It's hard enough to deal with all of the bureaucratic stuff, whether it's insurance or medical or, you know, government, whatever, taxes. Being born and raised in this country my whole life and speaking the language and understanding everything, I can't imagine if you can't. I can't imagine how difficult that is, dealing with the IRS, whatever. Bob writes in, Discover started as a partnership with a bank and some third party. Discover bought Diners Club a couple of years ago to have a presence outside the U.S.
Discover is the Sears credit card. That's where it started.
Kevin writes in, I managed credit card operations once upon a time. Not an easy business for a small issuer.
No.
Which I'm sure it's not.
I mean, you know what? I'm pretty sure. I shouldn't be 100% sure. I'm pretty sure that Sears was Discover. Matter of fact, Allstate was Sears, believe it or not. How many people know that? That Allstate was Sears.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It was Sears and Sure, right?
Tom and I did, but we're older than dirt.
Yep, we're older than dirt.
I can't argue with that.
And I well, I mean,
what happened to Sears? Good Lord. They had a piece of everything, and now they have nothing.
How did a company, who the first person in the world, understand that you have to have a way to market stuff to people who can't make it to your store, read internet? They figured that out in, what, 1870? You got the Roebuck out in the farm.
They should have been Amazon.
Yeah.
I'm still amazed that they didn't become Amazon before Amazon. They had the whole infrastructure set up. All they had to do was turn it online, and they could have been Amazon.
Well, and I don't, you know who else, the predecessors to this stuff was, of eBay and Amazon was J.R. Whitney. I mean, do you know that name, Eddie?
I know that name, but obviously
they were on South Michigan.
Yep, South Michigan, and you'd get this huge honking catalog, and if whatever kind of car you had, whatever part it was in the catalog, if you wanted a fender for a Ford Model T, it was in there, and somebody from God knows where, Southern Indiana, would stamp one out for you and send it to you. Just like Amazon, pretty much.
Wow.
SP futures up 975. S&P futures up 10. NASDAQ futures up $30. I'm going crazy here on credit cards. We're going to come right back with Mr. John Neal.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stars and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber, we have Mr. Jan Neal in a second. We've got S&P futures up 10. We've got NASDAQ futures up 31.75, down to like 126. Pretty reasonable morning, unless if you have stamps.com, which is down $100. I don't know how you could lose your partnership with the post office if you're a stamp.
I'm still trying to figure that one out.
I can't fathom that.
UPS stock crashes after they end partnership with trucks.
Yeah, end partnership with gasoline. It's like DAX up 63.6%, FTSE up 48.6%, CAC up 21.4%. So up, we're cruising on this, China thing. We got a big envoy here today. Trump's meeting with a guy, and they're pushing along. A disappointment here, I think, would be a disaster. On top of the, nobody's even looking at the Europe situation. We're all focused on China. The Europe one is kind of going the other way, but we're not looking at it today. We're up. Nikkei down 38.1%, but Shanghai up 52.1%, over 2,800, which we've not seen in a long time. 2804 Hang Seng up 186, 28.816. That's another 0.6% there. Oil, we've got up 72 cents now, 57.68, as high as we've seen in a bit. Brent up 52. That spread is now, it was over $10. Now it's $9.92 or something. Natural gas, 269. RBOB, 162. Get ready to pony up this week at the pump because it's up a bunch. At gold, up $1.10, continuing to move up. Second weekly gain in a row. It's pretty interesting. We've got these stock markets going straight up except for yesterday with, every other piece of news coming out from Europe and everywhere is to the downside economically, but, market doesn't seem to care. Eddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Already have a crash on the Eisenhower Chief blocking the two right lanes for a car fire, so I guess it's not really a crash, but crews are on the scene just before North Avenue on I-290 inbound side of the Ike, so that'll be a while as crews get that car fire put out, so avoid that area if at all possible, already causing delays on 290. Otherwise, we're relatively quiet this morning, as we usually are on Fridays. No issues on the Edens, traffic building on the Kennedy, but still just 50 minutes from O'Hare into downtown. Stevenson looks good. Southside Expressways, Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are all quiet. Suburban Tollways are looking good as well. One other crash in the area is out northwestern suburbs out near Arlington Heights. We have a crash on I-90 eastbound just before Route 59. That crash is blocking the shoulder on the right side, on the inbound side, just before 59 on eastbound I-90. So keep that in mind. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine today. Mild temperatures for late February, partly cloudy with a high of 35. Right now it is sunny and 27 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, lots of rain in the forecast today and a high of just 50. Right now it's rainy and 39. In sports, Suns were blown out by the Cavs last night, 111-98. Bulls were off. They're at the Orlando Magic tonight. Blackhawks host a big one at the UC as they're tied with Colorado, 1 point out of a playoff spot. So they'll host the Avalanche. That's a 6:30 puck drop tonight at the United Center. Coyotes were in action last night. They're in that same playoff hunt for a wild card spot in the West, and they got a big win over Vancouver in overtime, 3-2. College hoops, quiet locally, but Arizona was in action. They blew out Cal, 76-51. Chief.
Yeah, Jan, how are you?
Doing good, doing good. We actually, just to give you an update on the weather report, believe it or not, actually had snow here on my side of town. It was just some hail, things like that, but actually snow actually laid a little bit in Scottsdale. I mean,
wow.
Wow. It's a rarity for out here, obviously.
Is everyone okay?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's kind of a joke compared to what you guys get, but it's a more novelty out here.
What percentage of the population has snow tires?
Since we actually had snow out here.
What percentage of the population has snow tires?
None.
What percentage of the population here has snow tires?
Not very many.
Yeah,
a lot of people think they do when they get the all-weather tires. But.
Right.
Hey, just as a... cut me off after a minute, Maddie. The history of this is absolutely spectacular. Sometimes we should. I was wrong, though, in a sense. I knew Discover came from Sears, all right, but I did not.
Which I didn't even know that.
But they did. It was never considered to be a replacement for the Sears card. Okay, so I was wrong on that. Discover is a credit card brand issued primarily in the United States, introduced by Sears, 1985. When launched, Discover did not change its charge the annual fee and offered a higher than normal credit limit, features that were disruptive to the existing credit card industry. A subsequent innovation was the cashback bonuses. They were first with that as well. They were issued by Discover Bank, formerly the Greenwood Trust Company that was owned by Sears. They were processed through the Discover Payment Network. Get a load of this. In 2005, you might remember these guys, Matty, Discover Financial Services acquired Pulse, an electronic funds transfer network.
I actually don't remember that.
That's what allows them to do the debit and ATM cards because of this Pulse thing. But here's the history of this. I mean, boy, talk about names that I know, for God's sake. Discover was introduced. Sears was the largest retailer in the U.S. They had purchased Dean Witter Reynolds as a brokerage organization. They had people on the trading floor. They had a big group on the CBOE. And they purchased, I'd forgotten this too, they purchased Coldwell Banker, the biggest real estate company. This is all in 1981 because they wanted to get in the financial service businesses. Because they had split off Allstate by that time and kind of wanted to get back in. Get a load of this. Ray Kennedy Sr., father of country singer Ray Kennedy and the credit manager, conceived of the card. The actual launch was pushed through by, here's a couple of names. You'll remember these, John. Philip Purcell and Mitchell Marin. Phil Purcell ended up becoming the head of Dean Witter. They got bought by Morgan Stanley, and he ended up, became Morgan Stanley Dean Witter. And he ended up becoming head of Morgan Stanley. I know all these names from my SIBO board meetings for guys. It's unbelievable. Discover was part of Dean Witter and then Morgan Stanley until 2007. Discover Financial Service became an independent company. It says here, Novus was once the major processing center that partnered with the company. The Novus logo was retired, but I remember that, replaced by the Discover Network logo. They said they're the
only... I remember both of them,
yeah. They're really the only credit card to actually fight a pretty good battle against a Visa and MasterCard, where they have 14% of the population. Interesting. The only credit card...
The other interesting thing there, Chief, is you mentioned Dean Witter, you mentioned Discover, a few things in there, Coldwell Banker, you know, so basically Sears sells, you know, some pretty important assets or gets rid of some. Might have been a different story today with Sears, you follow me, with some of those assets.
Here's another one. Get a load of this. I would never be, you know, it's amazing what happens when you read. Discover was also noteworthy for being the only credit card accepted by the U.S. Customs Service to pay customs duty. And since it did not charge a percentage fee to retailers, unlike Visa, MasterCard, American Express, it was the only credit card accepted at Sam's Club.
There was a time when the Illinois DMV would only take Discover. And then I never knew why, but that must have been why.
Yeah, they didn't charge them.
And, at that, talk about, you don't bring, you know, typically you wouldn't think to bring cash to the DMV, and I only had a Visa. I had to leave and then come back like the next day with cash and then get back in that stupid ass, you know, 90-minute line. Now they do take it. Now they take everything. But this was like, you know, 10 years ago.
Well, they'll take a check. They always took a check.
Yeah. And, you know, 10 years ago, it was like right in the time when, one, I didn't have any money, so I didn't have cash. Two, I only had a Visa debit card. I don't even know if I had a credit card then. I certainly didn't have checks on me. It was a nightmare, but yeah, they would only take Discover. That's why. Makes perfect sense.
And you know what, guys, that rubbed both ways too, because there was many places that didn't accept Discover too.
Well, they that was because Visa and MasterCard put the arm on them.
And there's still a lot of places that won't take American Express.
Well, you know what's even weirder is American Express had to deal with Costco, and you got 3% back on your gasoline, and you got, I think, 2% back on restaurants, right? So Audrey and I, there's a good steak place on the south side, Jack Gibbons. So Audrey and I would go there, and I had my regular American Express card, and I had my Costco one, which is now Citibank. So I pull out the Costco one, which was green, I believe, and the waitress says, "Give me the gold one. We don't take the green one. We're not giving those guys 2%." You go, okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, they wouldn't take the one where you had to kick back 2%. I don't blame them. I mean, here's another thing. Why talk about powerful? If you have a gas station, I don't know what Visa, MasterCard charge. American Express, I think, charges more. I don't know. Matt, you know, people know more about this than I do. Isn't it stunning that, obviously everybody thinks that my one principle on earth is, I think when things are competitive, the whole world is better. I mean, the prices are fairer. People are more vibrant. It's just a better world. Why isn't, when you go to a gas station now, doesn't every single one? Now, if you go in Indiana to the truck stops, they'll give you 10 cents a gallon off paying cash on diesel. Now, why going into the Shell at Homer Glen with all this crap with this card getting 3% back and this and the other, why don't they just say 10 cents off for cash? I mean, they won't do it. Do the credit cards forbid them from doing that, or is that part of a contract they sign? To me, why doesn't that happen? I mean, it's so obvious to me. Or they just don't want their people holding money. Maybe that's part of it, too.
It could be a combination of all those things.
Could be a combination of all. I mean, you don't want hundreds and hundreds of dollars in the cash drawer, maybe.
I always do like, though, that one of my favorite bars always says, if you pay cash, we won't charge you tax. And I always like that, because obviously that means they're not paying tax.
Well, you know, what is the, it's my one, the bar up here at the Buckingham, which I don't like it as well as I used to like it, but they charge, isn't the protocol that if you sit at a table, you get charged tax for your drinks? But I never get charged tax at the bar. I mean, that's been kind of I've been going to bars for a long time. They do. I mean, you don't normally see that at, quote, the bar. Do you, Matty? I remember, John. I mean, what's it like out? You normally don't. I mean, if you go to a bar that has tables and you sit at the bar and watch a game and beers are $3, you pay $3. If you sit at the table and it's part of your check, then you usually pay tax. I mean, is that the protocol in Arizona, or is that just a Chicago thing, Jeff?
You know what? That's a good question. Next time I go to, the club, I go to, like, these blues clubs all the time. I've never really, noticed one way or the other, of how they're doing that.
Well, you should spend more time
on Maddie's end. I can see the cash thing. We all understand that one. But I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
Well, Jan, let's talk politics. Let's talk business here for a bit. I've, as you know, I put a lot of money to work this week. We got all kinds of new people wanting to do this Protected Index program, which I really think is what people should be doing now. They should be calling you and me, and we should, like I say, I think I've put $5 million to work in the last 2 weeks, which is a real number. And And I've gotten, the puts are cheap. I've gotten some good prices. I've been able to maneuver within the system. But John, I just have this odd feeling, maybe because I kind of started 3-4 weeks ago and I got some incredible prices on some of the stuff where I'm up $10 on indexes, for God's sake. And, you know, I haven't been up $10 on indexes in 3 weeks in 25 years. I mean, it's.
Right.
And I, when I bought them down there, I left it. Just because you're protected and you sell calls doesn't mean it's rote. I mean, I'm not a machine. I'm never going to be a machine. When we were lower, I think I bought the QQQs at 61 and change. Now they're 71 and change. But I think I sold like the 68 calls or something. I mean, I gave the thing like, you know, 4% to run in like a week. You know, because I really was pretty bullish. I mean, coming out of the December stuff, and I knew these guys were going to work this China thing for all it's worth, which they have. But now the money I'm putting together, I've got this pretty buttoned up, John. I mean, I'm trying to leave a little room to the upside, but I'm buying the at-the-money puts. And the puts are cheap. I put some stuff on the other day that I think if the IW, which I was in the Russell, if the Russell goes, right. Russell goes to zero, I lose like $6. That's how tight I... These puts are not, they're not expensive. I think I bought the September at-the-money puts. So I got the Russell at 157. I think I bought the 157 puts for like $7. You know, that's not bad. And December's are 9.
I mean, yeah, you're looking at, what, 4%, right?
Yeah, you're talking about 4%. I mean, and with the weekly calls you can sell, I give myself a fighting chance to be able to pay for those puts. I mean, I'm not saying I will or not saying it's going to work out, but by and large, I mean, with this kind of a run-up, how do you not at least take a little off the table at that price? I mean, it's not much dough. It's essentially a third of what it's run up the last week or two or three.
Right.
I mean, we're not talking about, you know, where's the VIX now? It's got to be, where the hell is it? It's down to under 15. I mean, you know, which isn't the same as, I'm paying more than that for those puts. I think I paid 17, Jan, which isn't, it's not the 25 it was 2 months ago. I mean, it's coming way down. I mean, and there's
right.
There's all kinds of bumps in the road in the next 8 months. And I want it to go up another $10. I don't want it to go down. But I'll be happy to, you know, keep rolling calls up and out of the way and then watch this thing percolate up and everybody's happy as a clam. And, you know, if the thing's up another $10 and I lose my $7 of my puts and I make $6 on calls, you go, girl. I'll do that forever.
Right. Well, we had a similar thing, not quite as good, but even in the precious metals, because yeah, we were tinkering, okay, are we going to stay with this? Are we going to stay with this? I don't know, the last couple weeks, I'm darn glad we stayed with it, you know?
Well, that's the overnight sensation it took 10 years to
Right, guys, how long have we been talking about that? You know, it's got to come, and, you know, and they keep artificially, doing some things that you know, kept it down, but now we're finally seeing it a little bit.
It's never an overnight
money on those.
Yeah.
No matter what you're doing, it's never an overnight sensation if you're the one that's actually doing it.
No.
Right?
Yeah, Jan Wayne in Stagecoach. What about the 10 years and the B movies? Oh, yeah. What about those?
Yeah, exactly. Before you get too far away from the regulations, Kevin writes in on Twitter, I'm not up on current regs, but differential pricing for cash versus credit once was verboten for Visa and MasterCard merchants. They could have the ability to accept cards revoked. I know it has changed, but I don't know what the current restrictions are.
Yeah, it's still not part of what most people do. They do it for over-the-road truckers. I mean, you'll see the cash price and the credit price actually on the big billboards, but you never really see it for gasoline. I mean, I don't anyway. I mean,
David writes in, kind of running through, we got a bunch of tweets here the last couple of days, and before we get out of here, I want to read some of them. PJ Saluki says, disgraced Enron chief Jeffrey Skilling was released from custody. He was sentenced to 24 years back in 2006.
Brother of Tom Skillful Skilling, our weatherman.
Yeah. The WGN Weather Center.
Yeah. I mean, he took quite a hit. I mean, other guys have done stuff just as shady. You've never seen anybody from Goldman or Morgan go to jail like that. And you know those guys were all over that stuff.
Natachi writes, and this is from your conversation with Lou yesterday. So I missed this, so you're going to have to add some color for John and I. But he says, I have a question about Lou Michaels' unhappiness with the dead naming issue. When a female friend of his gets married, does he insist on referring to her by her maiden name despite her wishes? Is it that hard to use the name people choose?
We had a I don't think Lou's.
When people complain about political correctness, very often what they're really complaining about is simple courtesy. Transgender people have been around since at least 1,000 years before Christ. In light of all of the corruption, cheating, abuse, scandal, and exploitation in the NCAA and pro sports, I find it interesting that you believe the biggest danger to your sport is transgender people. Matthew 7:5 applies here. I didn't hear your conversation.
Lou was talking about the invasion of the political correct things into. And where we're going, we're now people. What's the state now that the one of the airlines is not going to have male or female on the ticket anymore? That you can sort of, or you can put like undecided or whatever.
Why do the airlines care about that? Is that just security?
I'm sure it has something to do with security. At least you cut in half the people. But until we get a whole bunch of women that blow up planes, I don't know. I mean, I read the article and I never even thought about it, that you had to say whether you were male or female before. I mean, I guess you do. I just never even thought about it.
Shouldn't matter. I mean, yeah, I don't know why it would matter one way or the other. You know?
But where we're heading with this is there is a drive someplace to essentially take the differences of the sexes and that there isn't any. You know, that they're really.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, California was going to have some kind of a referendum. Where people are going to vote on it, where you don't put male or female on a birth certificate until the kid's 12, he gets to decide. Which isn't to say that people can't change or do whatever. People can do whatever they want, in my mind.
Yeah. That's a stretch.
Okay, Lou's point.
I think you should be able to go back and change it, like you said.
Lou's point was that if you mistakenly, since in our age, we knew Bruce Jenner as an elite Olympic athlete, and now, you know, for one of us to slip up and call him Bruce, shouldn't cause the hinges of hell to come pounding down on our shoulders. It's an honest mistake. I mean, it's not like he shouldn't have the right to do what he's doing. He should. I'm not going to criticize.
He should.
Yeah, well, she should. But I'm saying the idea that somehow or another, if I miss this up, you know, on national TV or something, that I should be banned from anything the rest of my life is kind of, I mean, you know.
Well, if a slip of the tongue is one thing, but if you're purposely not. You know, I look at it as like the people that refuse to call Muhammad Ali Muhammad Ali or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, if they choose to change their name, or in the Bruce Jenner to Caitlyn Jenner case to actually have a sex change, then why would I care? Why would I refuse to acknowledge their change? That's all. Now, if slip of the tongue
shouldn't affect you at all.
Exactly, and I think actually pretty much everything in life can come down to. Why would it bother me? I respect your choice to do what you want, and until it affects me, it's fine. Who cares?
If that makes you happy, exactly, in life.
I've never understood people's like outrage about everything.
Let's put it this way. I've had a weird situation, family situation. My cousin, she had some, you know, badass marriage, okay, and she ended up leaving Chicago because of it and so forth. And she's a musician. She went to Florida, and she was actually she played in the five star. What's the only five star place in Florida? It's the it's on the Naples side. Anyway, it's one of the Audrey and I stayed there with the CBOE people. Pretty nice place. Five star, duh. And she was a musician there for a long time, and somehow or another, this guy kept finding her. Till finally, she changed her name. Okay, to God knows what, and maybe I'm just an old. She was still Phyllis to me. I knew her my whole life, and really thought the world of her. I had trouble thinking of the other name. She, you know, I mean, it wasn't like I was being an idiot or anything.
Exactly. You weren't being an idiot about it, though. You weren't purposely calling her by her old name to spite her. That's what we're talking about.
I actually was
because you wouldn't do that.
But it wasn't the spite. It was like. I loved your old name. I love you. Just because you had to change it for this other idiot, you know, whatever. I mean,
by the way.
Well, that person never probably thought anything of it, realized, you know, you've known her forever,
and wouldn't think anything of it. Like the example Matt gives, if he purposely called Muhammad Ali Cassius Clay, you're doing that, you know, to fight him possibly.
Because you're probably anti-Muslim.
Or you're pissed off he didn't go into war and all the other stuff.
Right. Or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Pertaining to the tariff talk that we, you know, obviously covered all week because it's been in the news. Bob writes in, the Trump propaganda about tariffs has been quite successful.
Yes, it has.
Even Kevin was sucked in. I am glad Chief keeps pointing out it is a tax on raw materials and gets passed on to the consumer as well as allowing domestic producers to raise prices.
Now, having said that, in full disclosure, depending, and I can't emphasize this enough to everybody. And once in a while, you know, because of my limited education, but it's concentrated in certain areas. Every single product stands on its own. And if, in fact, there's a perfectly competitive product, okay, that comes in and there's 30 countries that make shot glasses, okay, and they all charge $1, and we put a dime tariff on Chinese shot glasses, I'm going to say that even though the tariff is paid for here, okay, the dime is paid for here, that in order for China to market this shot glass in a perfectly competitive world, which covers what, John? Five of the 5 bazillion items we use, that dime will be totally eaten by the Chinese, in which they will in effect have paid for that tariff. Because now I'm paying a dime for the tariff, but I'm getting the shot glass for 90 cents. But I'm saying that happens, it probably happens out of the thousands and thousands of products we bring into this country. That probably could be said by for 5 of them. Right. Thanks, John. I mean, is that a good answer, Manny? I mean, which isn't, because it's not like the Chinese aren't hurt by it, but we're paying it. No, there's a big difference. Let's be fair. Why am I being fair to Trump?
I don't know. I think it's because we're heading into the weekend. You're in a good mood.
NASDAQ futures up 21.
I like that one.
Well, you know what? You got to be fair to everybody. I honestly believe that. We'll be back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.